Missing Persons, Chapter 1, Christmas. The door crashed inward, the frame splintered. The occupants inside leaped to their feet. One pulled a pistol, but he was quickly disarmed by a 38 round of the shoulder. The other raised his arms into the air.
I ain't armed! Don't shoot me! I got no gun!
The bigger man moved in first. He leaned down to the cowering man.
Where is he?
He shouted into the man's face.
Who? Where is who?
A blow to the side of the head knocks the man's cranium to the floor.
Roger, you can't do it this way,
Doc Weaver said as he grabbed Roger York's elbow. Roger glared at Weaver. He gritted his teeth. He paused to look at Weaver and then to the man lying on the floor.
All right, you do it then, and he'd better talk.
Roger stepped back and Weaver stepped forward. He knelt down in front of the man.
I think he deafened my ear,
cried the man.
Well, I'm going to do more than that if you don't start talking. Now tell me, where's Jack Manson?
Are you kidding? He's probably dead by now.
A punch to the head knocked the man's face back into the disgusting stained carpet.
Hit him again! He knows something,
urged Detective Roger York.
No, I swear, they don't tell me nothing.
Is that so?
Weaver said, as he landed another hard blow to the side of the man's head. This almost knocked the man unconscious.
He works for Manny, and sometimes Lips. He knows something,
Roger said from behind Weaver.
Is that so? Working both ends, are you?
Weaver then pulled a dagger from the leather pouch that was fastened around his ankle.
Now, which is your good?
Hey, you can't do this!
The man pointed to Roger.
You're a copper!
I'm not doing anything.
The man looked back to Weaver's blade.
Vinny! It has to be Vinny! Just guessing.
Shut your mouth!
Shouted the wounded man. The dagger moved closer to the eye.
Vinny back in town now,
huh? Asked Roger.
Yeah, taking over everything.
Weaver stood.
So, Lips had help.
Yeah,
maybe that's why.
Roger paused a minute. He looked to his watch.
All right, Weaver, let's go.
The one holding his shoulder stood up.
Hey, copper! I'm definitely telling your new captain about this.
Both Roger and Doc Weaver ignore the man as they made their way to the sidewalk. The sounds of young boys selling daily papers could be heard from each street corner.
A shame, making a kid work on Christmas, said Roger.
Read all about it here. Captain Pantry, calling off search for detective. Read it here first.
Pantry,
scored Roger.
A worse crook than any of them.
Yeah. He's been working for Lip since he was a beat cop. Guess with Harrison dead, he found his ladder,
added Weaver. Roger just stared as men and women were scrambling up and down the streets.
Go home, Roger. You got kids. This is their day. Go be with your family.
Roger turned his head to face Weaver.
Where are you going?
I think I will see how Vinny is holding up. You know, with his brother missing and all.
Weaver pulled his coat collar closer to his thin neck. Roger extended his hand. Weaver took it and shook it.
You think Jack is dead?
He asked. Weaver looked away.
I'm not sure, but either way, I will find out.
Then he turned and began walking the sidewalk.
If you get anything from Vinny, let me know first.
I will, but first I have to track him down. He's as slippery as an eel in jelly.
Across town at a small pub called the Shamrock sits an ace reporter with nothing to report on. He lifts the glass to his lips and drinks the Jack Daniels down. He slams the glass back down onto the bar. He sits, the epitome of loneliness and despair.
Another one,
he says, as he sits with his head hanging low, glaring up at the bartender. His face has not seen a razor in 3 days. His eyes are swollen from lack of sleep. His clothes are disheveled and smell bad. What has brought a man to such a desperate conclusion? Well, he lost a friend. A good friend, in fact. And the worst part? He cannot help finding his friend. He was warned by the underworld to stay away from anyone that could offer up answers. And now he is alone. He chooses it, or so he tells himself.
A wise man once said, if at first you don't succeed, try again. And then quit. No use being a fool about it.
The bartender grinned.
Yeah, that wise man was W.C. Fields, I believe,
he said as he turned to take care of another patron. I always heard if you first you don't succeed, keep on sucking till you do succeed. Carl turned on his bar stool. Hello, stranger. Thought I might find you here. Carl's head groggily looks up to see a young woman standing behind him. Leave me alone, Beth.
Oh, poor Carl, she mocked as she climbed onto the stool next to him. So you lost your only friend. Boo-hoo.
Jack was not my only friend, he slurred. Just my, well, my best one. He takes a drink.
Oh, come on. At most, he was a meal ticket.
What's the matter with you, Beth? Can you not see what is going on here? Jack is gone, Manny's gone, and Jack was never a meal ticket. Sure, he threw me a good story once in a while, but meal ticket? Hardly.
Big deal, she said coyly.
The city is a free-for-all. People are afraid to walk down the streets now. Thugs own restaurants and bars. No offense, Jerry. And even the newspaper, the police. They own everything.
So, do something about it.
What? Oh, you're crazy. What can I do? He slurred and wobbled.
You're a reporter, so report.
Carl turned to look into her beautiful eyes, the beautiful green cat-like eyes. They will kill me.
Then we can be together. Is that not really what you would like?
Carl, you okay?
The bartender asked, with genuine concern. Carl turned his head. It wobbled on his shoulders.
Yeah, I'm fine. Why?
Well, you were just holding a conversation.
So?
With yourself.
Carl turned to look at Beth, but she was gone.
Oh, yeah. I forgot. Beth died. Covering a story or something. Wow. I must have drunken more than I thought.
Carl, it's Christmas. Don't you have anyone? Asked the bartender.
Well, you're the one open on Christmas, don't you?
Fair enough,
the man says as he walks away.
Jack should be here. I know those filthy rats killed him, and I should take another drink.
He throws his head back down, his poison nearly falling from the bar stool.
Here's to you, Jackson, old pal, wherever you are, he says,
before slumping onto the bar. Police headquarters.
Detective York, what are you doing here on Christmas?
Asked a young woman in uniform sitting behind a desk.
York! Captain Paratree wants to see you in his office first thing in the morning, said another officer.
I'm sure he does. I want to see him also. Where is he now?
Where do you think he is? It's Christmas, you know.
The desk clerk shouted,
Hey, where are you going, Roger?
Roger stopped before exiting the building.
Going to see the boss.
At his home?
You said that's where he is, didn't you?
He looked to the other uniform officer.
Yeah, I did.
The clerk turned to face another officer.
He doesn't look so good.
Yeah. Jack's disappearance has us all rattled.
And Roger was his best friend.
Yeah, and he won't stop either.
Another officer stepped up holding a cup of coffee.
Yeah. Well, he better. We all work for Lips Malone now.
The home is lively, made so by the woman of the house, what with all the decorations running through the house, the tree dressed to perfection, the outside lightings, the eggnog bowl sitting on the top of the counter, and of course the four children that are occupying the home now, Roger and Mary's biological children, and two that they decided to foster, the two whose parents were killed by a madman. The children scurry around the house, without a care in the world, playing with their new Christmas gifts. Mary stands and looks up to the stairs.
I worry about April. She's not adjusting well to living here. She is older, and her parents were killed across the street. And... Oh, Molly, I'm sorry.
Mary walked to the tear-filled woman. Molly lay her head on the tabletop.
I'm sure he will...
No, he won't. He won't be fine. I know these people. They will kill him, like they killed Jazz. Our whole world has come apart, Mary.
Mary looked toward the large window. The tape still covered the hole that was made from the assassin's bullet.
I know, Roger. He won't stop. I'm afraid for him, but I know better than to stand in his way. So I stay here and take care of the children as best I can. Oh, Mary, I wish I was strong as you.
Mary looked down to where Molly was sitting. Don't be ridiculous, she forced a chuckle. You're stronger. No, it's just a facade. I'm so tired and weak, and one day I lost my man and my boss. I don't know what I'm going to do. I feel as though I could come apart at any moment. Mary put her arms around Molly's shoulders.
You won't. I know how strong you are. I mean, you're able to put up with Jack Manson.
This drew a chuckle from Molly.
So, who will get the club now?
Molly wiped her tears from her cheeks.
I don't know. Maybe the ones that killed him. I'm sure somehow they will get it.
Mary put her arms around Molly's shoulders again, and this time she squeezed.
Let me make us some tea.
Molly looked up. Her dark eyes were swollen from the tears, and she forced a grin. She mouthed the words, thank you. Doc Weaver stepped into the alleyway. There were several men and a few women standing around the barrel filled with burning garbage. He stepped closer. One of the men turned.
You ain't supposed to be down here. Them's the rules,
said as small of a man, only 4 foot in height. Weaver grinned.
Yeah, but I've never been known to keep the rules.
Now three larger men turned to face Weaver.
Doc, I know you're fierce and deadly. I also know you're dying. So go home and do it already. Your time is over, squeaked the little man.
The three larger men began to make their way to where Weaver was standing. Doc is much thinner. The lung cancer was eating him alive. His face was now sunken. His eyes were encircled with red. He'd almost given up on eating altogether. He had grown a thin mustache that ran along his top lip and came to a point at each end. He grinned at the big man as if he himself stood 10 feet tall.
Lips owns all of this now, one of the muscle men said.
About that, I thought Vinny owned the town.
One of the men pulled a large butcher's knife from behind his back.
Oh, we're stepping it up, are we?
Then, like lightning, Doc pulled 2.38 revolvers from beneath his coat. He fired one shot into the head of the knife man, another shot into the abdomen of the other big man, and then one shot into the pelvis of another man that was reaching for some sort of weapon. Then he aimed both barrels at the small man.
You know, Lips owns the police also, and with Jack not here to protect you,
Weaver stepped close now.
Come on, Mouse. We'd better get off the street.
What?
Roger parked his car along the curb in front of Captain Peartree's home. He stepped out and marched to the front door and pounded. In a matter of only a few seconds,
"Can I help you?"
said a slightly overweight little brown woman.
"I want to see Peartree."
"I'm sorry, sir. It's Christmas and—"
Roger pushes past the woman as he made his way down the hall.
"York, what are you doing here? It's Christmas!"
"You calling off the search for Jack?"
"Roger, it's been 3 days. You know these thugs and what they do."
"Yeah, I know them well. And I know that you do too. Personally."
Peartree stepped closer to Roger.
What did you say?
Well, since they pay you.
How dare you? How dare you come into my home and accuse me?
Peartree is a short, stocky man with a large, round barrel chest. His arms are short and muscular looking. He wears a thick mustache that is graying.
Oh, come on, Peartree. How is it that everyone knows you work for Malone? Everyone but you, that is.
You're suspended, York. Starting now.
And without pay.
And if you don't leave right now and you say one more word, you will be arrested.
He moved even closer to Roger. Roger stood and looked down at the man.
Do you understand me?
Yes.
Yes, Captain, I believe I do.
Good. Now go home to your wife and kids. Also, if I ever hear of you muscling in on anyone else, especially with that ex-con Weaver, you will both be sitting next Christmas as cellmates. Now get out of my home.
Roger says nothing. He turns and makes his way to the door. He cannot help the feeling of defeat wash over him. He stops by the front door. A thought enters his head. If I can't use the law to hunt down Jack, then I will use someone else. He mumbles as he shut the door behind him.
You'll be fine. Just rest up.
The doctor turned away and made his way to the hallway. This is not a hospital. Well, a professional one anyway. It is not even a place one would classify as sanitary, and the doctor no longer has a license. But he is good. Very good. He has helped men that sat at the brink of death. His methods are not always condoned by medical professionals, and he has lost his share of patients before. But he is paid well by the underworld, so he keeps his practice open, and, of course, discreet.
Well, he is still healing, and to be honest, I am surprised he can even speak. The bullet he took has done some major damage to his brain. Also, the fire. How did you say he got out of that again?
The tall, thin man everyone referred to as Froggy looked at his two cohorts. Looked like he crawled to the water. The cabin set near a lake.
Well, tell Lips it will be at least another week before he's healed up. Why does Lips want him so bad?
And he worked with Marvin, said Wrinkles, a man that looked to be 100 years old, but in reality was only 30.
You mean the FBI guy Manny Sprung?
The one and the same. Just make sure this guy is able to talk. Lips wants to know everything.
Yeah. You tell him it will be expensive, but I will do it.
Yeah, we will tell him. Of course, you know Lips is running things now, says Froggy.
Yeah, I know, and good for him. About time I was getting paid again. Manny stopped using my services years ago. Well, since he built that monument to himself.
Oh, the building. Yeah, well, he doesn't sit up there no more. All right, boys, let's go get some Christmas dinner, Froggy said with a chuckle. Across the street on a fire escape, he watches. His black clothing shield him from the night. He sees three men exiting a run-down building. His eyes narrow through his mask. That has got to be the doctor's place, he says.
How can you be so sure? Asks the man standing beside him.
Brandon turns his head to look at the figure only he can see. I've been following these three mugs for a month. The guy they brought in was near death. This must be the place.
So what now? Asks the figure.
Brandon placed both hands on the railing and threw his legs over, landing hard onto the pavement, his long black coat blowing in the breeze behind him.
We keep following,